MyMac Podcast number 128, sponsored by MyMac.com and Audible.com.
And we've got a contest with a new twist, sponsored by Spec Products.
The next generation of radio, it's the MyMac.com Podcast.
And it's a time for another podcast.
Indeed. Here we are.
I am Tim Robertson. Chad Perry is sitting here next to me in Michigan. And via Skype and pixie dust, we have Guy Searle.
Yeah, once again.
We use the pixie dust connection. So, boy, we've got a full show. Chad alluded to this at the beginning of the show, the intro. We are going to do another podcast contest.
Yeah, what are we giving away this time, Tim?
Well, this time, before we get into what we're giving away and all that, in the past, what we've done is we've had people send in their name, address, and we just randomly picked one. And that's always fun, but, you know, the problem with that is this is an audio podcast. In other words, it's like a radio show. Right. So, I can't necessarily hold up an email to the microphone. Oh, here's our winner. Sometimes in the past I've actually called the winner on the telephone and recorded it prior to the podcast and then said, here's the audio when I tell whoever that they won. And they didn't know we were going to call. So, and that was kind of fun. But I kept thinking, it's still, we don't do the show live, so we can't have a live audience.
Yeah.
I know we can move to TalkShoe. I've actually looked into that, but I'm just not that committed.
Well, also, the bandwidth required to do something like that would probably be scoot up quite a bit as well.
Yeah, well, I haven't looked into that aspect of it yet, but I do have a cell phone. We do have Skype. We do have iChat. So the idea this time around is you still have to send in your name and address, an email address, as well as your telephone number. So what are we going to do, Chad?
Well, what we're going to do is if we pull your name using our random name yanking generator, we will be calling
you live. Is that the name of that software?
That's the official name, yes.
Name yanking generator.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
NYG.
Yes. That is trademarked. So.
Yes.
Don't just go.
I think the New York Giants had it first.
So, go on.
When we do pull your name, we will be trying to call you. If you are there when we call, you will be one of the winners.
But if you're not there or you don't answer your phone, you don't win. It's pretty simple, really.
Yep.
That's right. We send you hot wax.
This week we're announcing the contest, what the prizes are. Next week, next Thursday, between 6 and 8 p.m.
Eastern Standard Time,
we will actually be calling whoever we draw. Yeah. And if you're there and you pick up, this is a PG show. But you do have to answer the telephone.
Yep.
To become a winner. Now, I'm not going to limit it to just a telephone. If you send in your iChat name.
Or your Skype name.
Yep. We can probably try to contact you that way, too. So, if we have to go far enough down the list when people don't answer, I'll go with with iChat and Skype. I don't care. Of course,
U.S. mail is right out.
Yeah. But, of course, with Skype and iChat, you have to be online for us to be able to contact you.
Right.
So, telephone is probably going to work the best. Mm-hmm. So, I think maybe we'll just stick with that, right?
Yep.
So, you're going to send your name, address, phone number, and email address to
contest@mymac.com.
And we will call a week from when we're recording this right now, which will be Thursday. I don't know. What is
Thursday? That'd be Thursday the 10th.
Thursday the 10th. Between 6 and 8 p.m.
Yep.
So can they send a Skype message to join up?
No.
We'll be calling them.
We will be calling them.
Otherwise, it defeats the purpose of having the random name yanking generator.
So the real reason behind it, there's two reasons, really. Number one, I missed the contest. We've used the contest in the past to try to generate new listeners.
Yep.
That was kind of the idea behind it to begin with. But quite honestly, I like to do the contest stuff. I love giving stuff away, especially when it's not on my dime.
And we like talking to our listeners.
And that's the other thing I love.
You get a chance to do all the time.
I love talking to the listeners. It's great. They're Mac users just like us, mm-hmm. and it'd be fun to call somebody up and talk to them for a little bit, find out the Macs they use, how long they've been using Macs, you mm-hmm. know, the stuff like everybody likes to talk about their computer system and their setup and how long they've been using it.
Yep.
If they're listening to this show, they're obviously passionate about the Macintosh. And
what does that mean?
Yeah, we did that on the show 100, though. But so, as Chad said at the beginning of the show, Spec Products is the sponsor of the contest this week. And obviously next week when we give it away.
Yep.
And what are we giving away, Chad?
We are giving away the Spec see-through hard shells for the 15-inch MacBook Pro.
And it also works on the 13-inch MacBook. So if you don't have a MacBook or a MacBook Pro, you might not want to enter because this is a product for that.
And I believe
we'll still talk to you, though.
Absolutely.
Spec has been generous enough to even let you choose the color you want.
Yep. So when we pick the winner and we call them and we talk to them, I'll actually send your contact information as well as what you want, the color and the type of MacBook mm-hmm. you have, MacBook Pro, MacBook, and they will whip it out to you quickly.
Yep.
Maybe we'll even have multiple winners, so something to think about. Now, I do want to talk about the see-through for a few minutes, and Guy can attest to this. When I was at Macworld Expo, a lot of people, I had the red one, and I still have it on mm-hmm. my MacBook Pro. A lot of people commented on that. I can't tell you how many people would stop and look at it. Like, ooh, what's that? Even though Spec Products was right there on the showroom floor, it's different when you saw someone with it on their computer.
It really makes it look different.
It does. It really makes a MacBook Pro.
And, you know, considering that Apple hasn't updated the MacBooks or MacBook Pros as far as looks go in a long time, that's a good thing.
Well, they've got black now, which that'd be kind of neat. They have clear. Clear is more for protection only because it's not really adding color. They have red. I have the red one. They have pink. Mm-hmm. Which I personally wouldn't be interested in, but I know some colleagues that really would be interested in the pink one.
They've got an orange.
And green.
Blue?
I saw blue at the expo, but I don't see blue
on the
on their site?
On their website. So I don't know I don't know what's going on with that. Or they're just not showing it.
The plot sickens.
I have to find out one of these days. What happened to the blue one? Because we have video from the Macworld Expo, and it
showed it. He was holding it up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Brian, I believe.
Yep.
And it was. It's a cool product. I really like mine. In fact, I noticed that mine was collecting stuff inside of it between the case itself and the MacBook Pro. So mm-hmm. I took it apart, cleaned the MacBook Pro, cleaned the inside of the see-through case, mm-hmm. put it back together, and it looks brand new.
Just clips right on, doesn't it?
It just clips right on. It's real easy to use. So. It's a really neat product. If you have a MacBook or a MacBook Pro, it really will make your machine look a lot different. It will make it a lot more eye-catching. Mm-hmm. And you can get one for free. All you have to do is enter the contest. So
if you're still using a Pismo, you might want to hold off.
Yeah. You know, I still have my Lombard. I don't know. One of these days, I'll do something with it. And the other bit of news we need to take care of today is our new
sponsor.
Yeah. Yay!
That is Audible.com.
Audible is going to actually set me up with an account, and I've never tried Audible myself. I don't know why, because I love reading, I love stories, and I listen to my iPod all the time. It's one of those things that I kept thinking, I should join Audible, and I just never really...
If we could just combine all these things.
I kept saying, I want to check it out one of these days, I just never got around to it. But it's one of those things that I did want to try, so... Mm-hmm. I've convinced them to give me a free account while they're a sponsor.
Cool.
They say, you know, if you're sponsoring the podcast, here's an idea. Hey. You know, it's not just books, though, either. They have podcasts.
Yes, they do.
And they also have stand-up comedy acts, because Chad and I was previewing Lewis Black last week.
Yep.
And I'm really interested in the stand-up comedy stuff, downloading some of those and listening to them. But they are now a sponsor of the podcast, and they're offering something really cool for our listeners only.
And what would that be?
If you go up to MyMac.com, right now at the very top of the page, the only banner you're going to see at the top of the MyMac.com website is from Audible. If you click that, they're going to give you 2 weeks for free, which is really cool. So you could try it for free.
Yeah.
But even better, they're going to give you a free audiobook when you sign up. Really? So not only do you get to try it for free, you're going to get something for free. And when I say they're going to give it to you, I mean, if you decide to cancel your Audible account, that audiobook is still going to be yours for free.
Mm-hmm.
So the month of May here at MyMac.com is the month of Audible.com. It's really cool, and I really appreciate them sponsoring us. They've got over 35,000 titles, and it's every genre you can think of, and it's free. What more could you want?
That's right.
I mean, if you're listening to this, you obviously like spoken word stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You probably are listening to this on an iPod.
Yep.
Here's something else you can do.
Yeah, so head over to MyMac.com, click on the banner to Audible.com, and get yourself a free book and 2 weeks free service from Audible.com.
So there wasn't a whole lot of news this week coming out,
no.
Guy.
I had to look really, really hard to put something together.
Yeah, that whole QuickTime zero-day exploit that was making the Mac News site rounds over the past week or so. Interesting.
Done.
Patched.
Yeah, that was patched, though, right?
Yeah.
So do you guys think that the Mac is as vulnerable as PCs, or do you think... I don't know.
Well, you know, what I keep hearing, you know, and what you hear all the time is, well, if Apple had, you know, 80,000 billion percent market share, they'd have that too. But, you know, even if that was completely true, it still means that you're safer on a Mac.
I do have a question. They, in quotes, mm-hmm. say right. that guy, do they use that voice?
Yes, they do. Okay. It's really annoying.
I was going to say, you know, if they hit a market carrier. And then you punch them and say, get away from me.
Yeah, well, that's the best part.
You know, the Zune has 3 million songs available for it on the Zune Music Store, guy.
Really? Three million songs.
Which is probably about 2.75 million more songs than actual Zune owners. I'm just guessing.
You can't even say that.
We laugh because we kid.
Yeah.
Well, no, not really.
We love Microsoft, don't get me wrong, but
yes,
well, Microsoft announced that Zune has 10% of the hard drive MP3 player market share.
Hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, okay. For December, yeah.
Truth time. Has anyone actually seen a Zune
In the wild?
No.
I've seen them at Target and Best Buy. And in fact, they're pushing them quite hard at Walmart. The last mm-hmm. time I went into Walmart, the display that used to show the iPods is gone, and it's all Zune.
Mm-hmm.
And well, it's like rhinos.
Yeah.
It's like rhinos. Unless you see one in a zoo, they don't really exist.
Yeah, well, I actually saw one in a zoo not too long ago. So.
Yeah.
Speaking of zoo, Chad's house is a little funky today.
Yeah.
Serious, I walked in and it wasn't me. This is kind of strange. When I walked into Chad's house today, the first thing that his wife said is, smell our dog. That's not quite the, well, hi, Kim. Hi, Tim.
So glad to see you. Smell my dog.
Smell my dog. I don't want to smell your dog.
Okay. Yeah, but is that the voice that Kim used?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Smell my dog.
Smell my dog.
I thought it was a euphemism for something else at first. Chad's right there. Come on. But what? Why did I have to smell your dog, Chad?
Not till this weekend.
Well, we're trying to socialize her, and part of that includes doing dog greetings with all the people she knows. So, but at least you only had to smell the front end. So,
oh. Oh.
No, what had happened was about 2 a.m. on Monday, she gets me out of bed to let her out. I assumed it was emergency and she had to go outside, so I let her out. I'm downstairs flipping through Home Shopping Network channels because there's nothing else to do until she gets done with her business.
And you're not going to stand out there.
Yeah, and I'm not going to stand out there and watch her. So about 2:15, 2:20, I go upstairs, open up the door to the garage, walk to the garage door that goes out back, and of course, I smell this horrid, acrid, toxic, reeking, burnt skunk anal gland smell. And I knew that there was trouble brewing.
So it wasn't the dinner you'd had the night before?
Not at all.
Okay.
And I was all the way at my house, yeah, so it wasn't me. House.
So I pop open the door, and there is my dog with long, ropey drool dripping out of her mouth, reeking of skunk. And apparently she'd been hit.
Ooh.
Yeah, so basically we've been trying to de-skunkify her all week. First thing I did is scoot her upstairs, tried to keep her from touching anything in the house, and chased her into the bathtub where I washed her. So my wife, and then of course, you know, that didn't really help a lot, so I kept her in the office down below from where we sleep.
Which is where we're at right now.
Yeah. So my wife takes her to the vet because she has to go get her heartworm and flea pills anyways for the summer.
And did they let her in?
No. She left the dog there, but asked the vet what to do.
Tied to the front door.
The vet says, oh, the worst thing you can do for a dog that gets sprayed is to try to wash it. All you'll do is wash it in. You're supposed to use this skunk off.
Oh, thanks.
And I'm thinking, yeah, thanks. So I guess next time I'll be calling you at 3 a.m. looking for some skunk off.
It is. Now, are skunks indigenous all around the world, or is that more of a North American?
I think they're North American.
Yeah, I think that's more of a Western continent.
Yeah, I don't know if our listeners in the U.K. would know.
They have their own smelly animals.
Yeah, but there's... You cannot mistake the scent of a skunk spray. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
Springtime here, in at least in West Michigan, seems to be the time that skunks are kind of on the prowl for a mate.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually spray to attract other mates as well.
Yeah.
And, wow. I mean, you go through an area, and the windows are up in your car and everything, and you're just, all of a sudden, it's just like, oh, my God, what the heck is that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just...
That wasn't a chili burrito.
You can't even describe to someone who's never had smelled a skunk spray how bad it really... It sounds funny, but it is just horrible. I mean, it's... Wow,
and if you've
horrible.
Never seen a live skunk, just imagine a four-legged penguin, because that's about how they move. Yeah. They just kind of wobble at their own pace. They don't move very fast because they just don't need to.
Yeah.
It's
stay away.
That's right.
So back to Mac stuff.
Thank you.
Guy writes here: iPod street crime rising. Those damn iPods.
That's right.
They're robbing people in the street now. As if 99 cents a song isn't enough, now the iPods are out of control, robbing people in the street.
They've become
juvenile delinquents.
Jobs.
Juvenile delinquent iPods.
So Apple has been asked by the UK Home Security...
Or Home Secretary John Reid...
Yeah, sorry.
...to develop defensive technology into the iPod to prevent its theft. I can think of one we just talked about.
Yeah. Wrap it in a skunk.
That's right.
A little skunk sprayer in it.
That's right. The eye stink.
But I'm guessing that's not going to help its sales.
No. What exactly those technologies are supposed to be have been left up to Apple or Tim, Chad, and Guy.
Yeah,
put us on that board. We could come up with some ideas on how to make the iPod unsavory for thieves. I mean,
well, they could make it look like a Zune.
That is what I was going to say.
Put it in a Zune case.
Yeah, that's right.
It's perfectly safe.
Oh, no.
Microsoft's boss says the iPhone won't get more than 2-3% market share. Okay, how many iPhones are sold every year? And if
none
Apple,
so far.
No, phones. not iPhones, phones.
Oh, phones.
And if Apple actually got, say, on the low end of that, 2%, mm-hmm. that would more than pass sales of the iPod, wouldn't it? In the cell phone industry?
Probably, yeah.
I mean, I know everybody has a cell phone at this point. Almost everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, my cat doesn't.
In fact, I think if you walked out of your house and went to the local grocery store and counted everybody who has a cell phone on them, I think you would find more people that have cell phones that don't have cell phones. I think that's probably a safe bet.
Yeah.
So the cell phone market is so much larger than the iPod market. Now, there's no question there.
Mm-hmm.
And if Apple got 2-3% of that market, they would be a powerhouse. They would be huge.
Yep.
So I think that Apple would read that quote from Steve Ballmer and say, let's hope we get 2-3% market share.
Well, he actually said he was only thinking he was going to get 1%.
Well, so they're hoping for 1%.
Yeah. So that's actually quite a bit higher than what Steve Jobs was expecting.
I was reading up on Daring Fireball, John Gruber's site, that everybody's talking about, oh, the price of the iPhone is this, oh, that's just too much. Do you know how much the Razr came in at when it first launched?
It was like $400 bucks, wasn't it?
It was $499. Mm-hmm. And that's been the best-selling cell phone of all time. Now, granted, they're a lot cheaper now, but even when they were a $500 cell phone, people were buying them like they were hotcakes.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was different, it was sexy, it was cool, and they sold a crap load of Razrs at $499. And that was with a contract. That was $499 with a 2-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
So how much worse or better will the iPhone do? Now, to me,
I think Apple will basically sell however money they make. Not much problem.
Yeah. The deal breaker for me is it's not a flip phone. I don't like the idea of having a larger cell phone than I already have that has a very...
exposed face.
This face is just completely exposed. To me, I look at the iPhone, and you know what it kind of reminds me of, at least as far as size and what it is the Sony PSP.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to carry that around. Now, obviously, there's going to be a huge aftermarket for cases for the iPhone. No question.
There already is.
There already is, correct, yeah.
Yeah, there's some that are being made already.
But it's
they don't even have one to mold it to. They're just basically, you know, basing it on what they can figure out.
Well, Apple will give them specs on as far as size and thickness and all that. Placement of the button. But,
you still got to figure a way to get to the screen, though.
Yeah. Well, it's probably going to have to be a case that will flip open.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I want... I want one. Don't get me wrong. I just don't know if it's really practical for the way I carry... I take an iPod with me, but I don't take it into every store I go into. It stays in the car. You know? I'm not going to leave my iPhone in the car. It's going to go with me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the point. I don't know. It's kind of a... I don't know what's going to happen with the iPhone. I really don't. I think it's going to be a success. I just don't know if necessarily I want one.
Right.
And I know for a fact my wife doesn't want me to have a $400 or $500 phone.
No.
So what else is going on? Something about Vista Guy?
Yeah. Apparently the University of Pittsburgh's Medical Center is going to adopt Vista as soon as they possibly can. And I'm really happy that that's not my local hospital.
Wow. Okay.
Yep. Karen Malik, the University of Pittsburgh. According to Karen Malik, the University of Pittsburgh plans to adopt Vista as soon as all critical applications are stable, supportable, and fully functional.
So they should be ready in probably 2011.
2015. Yeah. That would be my guess.
Did she actually say stable?
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the issues that still need to be ironed out is application reliability, driver support, and hardware support. But other than that, it's clear sailing.
We're about a month away now from WWDC.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen June 11th.
Yep.
Is the day it starts. That's the day that Steve Jobs is going to give the keynote at the WWDC, which should come as no surprise to anybody because he always does.
Right. It shocked the hell out of me.
Yeah, I think he's going to say that, you know, the iPhone's ready. I think you're going to see it that day. That's the day you're going to be able to buy the iPhone.
Yeah.
I got to imagine he's going to do a lot of stuff on Leopard. This is the developers conference after all. They already released a new Power Mac, right? Just recently, the Quad.
Yeah.
Was it Quad?
No, the Octo.
Octo.
Octa-core. Yeah.
The iMac is so long in the tooth, isn't it? Is it just me, or is the iMac needs a refresher big time?
I love mine.
Yeah, but don't you think though that how long has this style been out, at least?
Well, whatever it is they do to it, as long as they don't make it look like a lamp, you know, okay.
To be completely honest with you, Guy, I like the styling of the G4 iMac more than the G5 iMac. Intel iMac.
I would have to disagree.
I like how
my brother has one, or actually my brother's wife uses one. 15-inch. I think it's an 800 megahertz G4.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice, but, I mean, just trying to move it around to plug something in or you know, I mean, the screen is certainly a lot easier to move around. You can take two fingers and move it in any direction you want. But there was just something about that machine that just left me cold.
I liked it. I liked how it felt like the screen is just floating in the air in front of you. I really liked it. Whereas the iMac feels like it's just a monitor.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like, where's the computer?
Exactly.
But I liked the floating in front of me thing. You know, I wish they would have gone corner to corner with nothing but screen instead of the ugly white stuff that they put around it and the clear stuff. But if it would have been just a little bit bigger, I don't know. I really like the styling of the G4 iMac, and I know people go kind of both ways on that. Mm-hmm. They hated it or they loved it. I loved it. I thought it was great. I think it's still one of the best-looking Macs that Apple's ever produced.
But, well, they couldn't have put a much bigger screen on it, though, than the 17.
No, 17 is probably the biggest they could go with, unless they added significantly more weight to the base.
Mm-hmm. Or, yeah.
And the arm would have to be a little stronger.
Yeah.
So if they would just completely redesign it, it would have been perfect.
Yep. And I see Greenpeace is now claiming victory in their Green My Apple campaign.
Way to go.
Yeah. You want to read that story, anybody?
Take it away, Chad.
Apple's CEO Steve Jobs, who has become quite prolific in his writings, lately released a letter comparing Apple's plans for eliminating certain harmful chemicals in their end products and plastics from packaging. According to Mr. Jobs, Apple is well ahead of implementing these plans as compared to many of its rivals while still having a much lower score on Greenpeace's environmentally friendly company list. This is the first time that Apple has laid out their future plans in such detail, and that is apparently what Greenpeace is crowing about.
Mm, good for Greenpeace.
Yeah, aren't they special? Yeah.
What a bunch of Dell users.
Well, you know, and I think we've talked about this before when we were at Macworld. Just outside Moscone North, they had this great big inflatable green apple.
Yep.
And what did they have to keep it inflated? A big gas generator.
Yeah.
So belching out fumes to give some other company a hard time about not being environmentally friendly.
And they had a huge presence when the press was around, but as soon as the press was gone,
oh, they were gone.
Well, not everybody. I'll give them a credit.
Well, yeah, they did show back up on our last day.
And the nice thing, the only really good thing that I think that they did was they were actually handing out green apples to people. Actual apples.
Mmm.
And I ate some
crunchy,
of mine.
Crunchy, yummy.
Mmm. it was delicious.
Yeah, I had one too, and I threw the cord at their head.
Happenings up on MyMac.com right now. Roger Bourne, way off topic, is asking,
oh, yeah,
who is better, Spider-Man or Iron Man? And he makes the case for Iron Man. And I personally think Spider-Man makes a better hero. But yeah, if you want to join that discussion, head up to MyMac.com. It's on the blog side. Chris Siebold returns after a long absence, and he posts some videos up there that was quite funny.
Mm-hmm.
I liked them.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce Black has a post called "What Has Jumped the Shark Today?" Might have been this podcast. I'm not sure. Over on the feature side, I'm not sure what I'm going to post between the time that we record this show and
when it
goes live. But right now, the top feature is actually from me. It's my day one impressions with Adobe Creative Suite 3, the Web Premium Edition.
A.K.A. how to actually uninstall Creative Suite 3.
Well, yesterday I get home and I've got a little box there, and it's from Adobe, and I open it, and they actually sent me the Web Premium as well as the Print Premium Edition,
oh, nice,
the Design Premium.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, this is cool because I've got two different machines. So I put the Web Premium on the MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I was really looking forward to getting finally Photoshop CS3 working on that. I've talked about on the podcast in the past that I installed it, the beta version of Photoshop,
right,
on that machine, but for whatever reason, it would not take my CS2 code, you know, the serial number that you have to put in there. And that would have allowed me to use the beta for as long as I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're limited to like a day or something, or 2 days. I forget what it was. And it wouldn't take my code. Well, I know this was a valid code because this was my review copy from Adobe. It's, you know, I knew it was a good code, but I wasn't going to spend too much time trying to figure it out. I was like, well, you know what? I'll just keep using CS2 Photoshop until the CS3 comes out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you knew it was you knew you were going to get it a media copy. So
yeah, I wasn't worried.
It wasn't that big a deal.
No, although I really did like the speed of the beta version of Photoshop compared to CS2. That was quite impressive. Mm-hmm. So I get the CS3 package and I install it, or at least I try to. And you can read my post. Basically, what happened was it would let me install everything, but it would not let me install Photoshop CS3 because it said it already existed. There's a conflict. Mm. I went, So then I decided, well, maybe I should read this little README file. And in the README file, it states quite clearly you cannot uninstall it by simply dragging it to the trash. You have to run an uninstaller. This is very un-Mac-like. Mm-hmm. I don't like this even a little bit. What that's telling me is Adobe Photoshop CS3 is installing in the entire CS package by default, is installing crap all over the place on my hard drive. So if I just drag Photoshop to the trash and throw it away, it didn't get rid of everything. Mm-hmm. And the shipping version of CS3 saw the other pieces, so it would not let me install it. So I ran the uninstaller, but since I had thrown the CS3 beta away... It would not, it wouldn't work. It just wouldn't throw, it wouldn't uninstall the rest of the crap. So I actually had to download from the Adobe's support site a little terminal application, or a terminal script,
for
I should say.
For people who made the same mistake.
Yeah, who did the same stupid thing that I did, that will go in and delete the rest of the stuff. And once I did that, it installed fine. It took a long time. It took like 45, 50 minutes to install CS3 on that MacBook Pro, which... To me, that seems like a long time to install.
Yeah.
And they don't use Apple's installation program at all. It's all Adobe. Mm-hmm. And it looked very much like something I would imagine it would look like under Vista or XP. It didn't look Mac-like as it was installing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it installed everything. I fired it up. It asked for the serial number. I popped it in. It said you have to activate this within 30 days, and if you don't, we'll send the Gestapo to your house and shoot you. So I said, yeah, activate it, click the button. 2 seconds later, I was in a Photoshop, and it worked great. Mm. It was very, very fast. Everything. I mean, it was noticeably zippier than CS2. Now, obviously, that's on an Intel machine,
right?
And CS2 was not an Intel application, so that was running under Rosetta. So I was expecting it to be faster. But it's significantly faster. Now, obviously, also, I don't have any third-party plugins or anything.
Right.
But just the base Photoshop CS3, it is so much faster. You're like, holy crap. It feels like a new application. Mm. It really is impressive. The other thing that I finally got to play with was Dreamweaver. Now, I've been using... Adobe Go Live even before Adobe bought Go Live.
Mm-hmm. Who owned that before?
Oh, I cannot think of the name. You know what? While I'm sitting here talking, I'll just jump on my archive and do a search for Go Live, because I did the review of the very first version. No, that's my review of a Go Live Cyber Studio 3.1 from 1998. So, let's see. Who made it? Was it Cyber Studio was the name of the company?
So, Chad, I understand your dog got hit with a skunk.
No, it was Go Live Systems.
So it was like their own program.
Yeah.
The program was named after the company.
Or vice versa, one of the two, yeah.
Right.
And I always liked that program, so I stuck with it. When Adobe purchased it, I just kept moving up in versions. Mm-hmm. I never really tried Macromedia's Dreamweaver, and I heard a lot of good things from it, like from John Farr and some other people that I know that really are... hooked on Dreamweaver. They say it's a better application, but because I've been using Go Live for so long, I knew how to get around in it. I was comfortable with it. The interface is very Photoshop Illustrator like. I just stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not in the new version.
Mm.
So
the web version doesn't have that.
It does not have Go Live. It has Dreamweaver.
Well, how do you get? Oh! So you think Go Live is?
I think Go Live is
going away.
Go Live is gone.
Yeah,
yeah,
and they're going with Dreamweaver. And I have to say, and I only played with it. Maybe for an hour, if that. I don't even think it was that long. And in fact, I used it to do the HTML for this day one post. Mm-hmm. I like it. It has some things in it that Go Live didn't. Like, you can have your window split so you can see your raw code in one window and the actual
preview in the other.
Yeah, the finished.
Oh, that is nice.
That was nice. I know there's other applications that would do that as well, but coming from Go Live, I would have to click a different tab, and then I couldn't see the code anymore.
Right.
But I like the menu layout in Dreamweaver. It's taken me a little bit of time to get used to, but it puts a lot of the options at the bottom of the screen, which usually I wouldn't like, but it makes sense in an HTML editor. I like it. But so far, so good. I'm quite impressed with Dreamweaver. I'm probably not going to do the review of it. I might write about it, but I'm not going to do the full review of it. That's probably going to be John Farr.
Yeah.
He's got his own copy, right?
I don't know if he's got his yet or not. John Farr's getting a copy. John Nemo's getting a copy. And Robert Hazelrig's going to get a copy. I don't know if they're going to get both versions like I did or just one version. I don't know. Maybe they saw the publisher tag on my name and said, we'll send him something special.
There you go. Oh, that's nice.
But there is one thing that bugs me about the entire CS3 package.
And that would be?
The icons.
Yeah?
You see the PS icon up there? That is Photoshop's icon.
Don't.
Yes, a big blue with a PS in it.
Because I looked at that and I thought, what does that mean?
Why did Tim use that?
Yeah, why did Tim use that? What does that mean?
That is Photoshop's new icon. I don't know why they went with the ugliest icons.
Is there an O in there anywhere?
No, I wouldn't go that far, Guy. I mean, the application is great, but the icons are just ugly. If you know for a fact that you own, that you produce...
You know, it looks like they pulled it off of a periodic table.
Yes, that's exactly what it looks like. You're absolutely right. In their defense, I will say this. It does stand out in your dock.
Yeah.
It really does. Mm-hmm. And I'm not convinced that the old Photoshop icon with, like, the feather that came up. And
right.
I'm not convinced that that was a great icon by any stretch of the imagination. No. I personally like the eye icons. You remember when Photoshop had, it was just like an eye?
Yeah.
I like that. That was a good icon. The new ones are just, meh. They all look like that, this blue gradient color, but they're all different colors. Mm-hmm. And I don't know.
Yeah.
It looks like it was icon by committee.
Mm.
So if you want to read more about it, it's day one, Adobe Creative Suite 3, Web Premium. I'm going to install the Creative Premium on the G5, and I'll start doing some reports on that over the next couple weeks. Neil Monks has a review of Macquarium. That looks pretty cool.
Yeah, you guys think about using that? I know you guys have always had fish since I've
been. Well, we have fish, so it's like, well, I can have faux fish or real fish, and...
Well, it's for tracking your fish, so it's for tracking your tanks.
I know, but I'm not that much into it.
Okay.
Neither is my wife. And that does the pH levels and all that. That's more for salt water than anything.
Probably. I think in Neil's review, he basically did say it was better for
salt
marine
water.
Folks and fresh water. So.
Donnie Yankolo does the SendStation dock extender. I don't know about you, Guy, but I really like the idea of a dock extender. I might actually buy this myself because I can't tell you how many times that I've got something that I need to plug the iPod into. But
you can't do it because of the case?
But the case I'm using, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. This is a great idea. It just extends your dock so you can plug it into other items.
Yep.
Do you remember that thing that we reviewed? It's kind of like a small little suitcase that flipped open and it was speakers. Can't remember who makes it now.
Oh, yeah, and I know what you're talking about, and I can't remember the name now.
And the way it sat in there, I literally have to take, and I use that in the basement. Like, lately I've been doing a lot of work in the basement for about, I don't know, 6-7 months now. I remember I had the flooding down there and all that. Been painting the walls in the basement. And so I'll take my iPod down there to listen to either music or podcasts or audio books from audible.com. See what I did there?
Nice.
Good, I'd have to take it out of the iPod case to use it with that.
Right, because once you put it in a case, it wouldn't fit in that player. Yeah.
And the case that I use is the flip case from Griffin Technologies, where it just kind of flips over so it can stand up on its own.
Yeah.
I really like that case, even though I cracked the back of it, so I need to buy a new one. So now when I take it out, I'm so worried that the case is going to completely break in two, and then I'm screwed because I don't like any of the other cases that I have right now. I like that case. And then I have to call Griffin and say, I'd like to review the red one. Yeah. Really, you should send me another one.
More cases, please.
More cases, please. speaking of cases, you know how we have this contest.
Yeah.
I want another see-through. I like the red that I'm using, but boy, it would be really cool to have a couple of them. I don't know if I can justify.
You'd mix and match.
Well, they're $50 each. The see-through case from Spec Products. I don't know if my wife would be particularly happy if I spent like $100 just to accessorize my MacBook Pro.
No, she wouldn't.
So I think spec really
does
should.
Does she listen to the podcast?
Oh, hell no. Are you kidding? She doesn't listen to me when I'm standing right in front of her. You think she's going to listen to me?
You think she's going to download me?
Yeah, welcome to Marriage in America.
She's going
to
listen to a recording of me, too? Oh, why don't you just give her a gun, guy? Have her shoot herself. I think
we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I think Spec should send me a version, one copy of each color they have, so I can do a comprehensive review. I don't need a red one though. I already have the red.
Oh, yeah, listen to me. Put it on.
I hope they're sponsoring us for our contest next week.
we may get a cease and desist.
Yeah. Tom
Schmidt.
Yeah, he returns with an. iSync 80s style, 1980s style.
That's a MyMac.com help desk number 10.
Yeah. Did you see
that icon?
I spent some time making that icon. Yeah. It's from Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, I know. I could tell.
Vice City. No. That takes place in the 80s. But I even used the font that they use in
nice,
GTA.
Yeah.
And I had fun. Now, it's bigger than most of the ones that we usually usually. I don't go any more than 125 by 125 graphics on the front page. Mm-hmm. That one's like 180.
Yeah, but it looks good.
It was so cool, I had to use it.
He's so proud.
I'm so proud of myself.
Donnie Ankle's got a review of the iTrip Nano.
As well as a Burn Again DVD.
Which I thought was a really cool product.
Yeah, it is. It looks neat. It's something that I think a lot of people could probably use.
Oh, because I always feel guilty about that as well. Especially when I was out of my iPod. Now I'm using my wife's Shuffle, but... You know, when I wanted to listen to my podcast, I had to burn them to DVD or CD. And, of course, you know, it takes up almost no room on there. So.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I just kind of wasted that, didn't I?
Yep.
Coming up on the rest of the podcast, up next is going to be David Cohen. He's going to be talking about, on Fenestration this week, he's going to cover the US-UK-related cross-compatibility issues with Apple Airport Extreme and the Apple Airport Express. I haven't actually got it. He's probably recording that as we speak.
And I believe we have another Book Bites, don't we?
Yeah, we got one from John Farr, John
Nemo.
Did I say John
Farr?
Nemo. Too many Johns. He does an interview.
You're so far away.
He does an interview with Don Mason. He's an author. Color Management for Digital Photographers for Dummies, which I should probably read that because I take a lot of pictures with my digital camera, and I'm constantly trying to correct the color on them. Mm-hmm. That's the problem with the small digital cameras that everybody uses, that everybody owns. It just mangles your photos as far as JPEG compression. Mm-hmm. You really do have to run that through, say, Photoshop CS3 to make it look as good as you can.
And where can they get Photoshop 3?
Go to mymac.com and click the link that my... No. I bet... How much you want to bet that Audible... .com has some CS3 content up on their site.
Oh, I'll bet they do.
I got them here on the site, or here on my computer.
Do you?
Let's see if I can find it.
We did get some feedback for this show. Yep. You want to go through some of that, Chad?
Yeah, we've got some more email from our friend Rune Anderson over in Norway.
Rune is one of our longest listeners. There must be something wrong with Rune. He's listening to this show for this long.
Oh, almost as long as we've been putting it out there.
Yeah. What's wrong with this guy?
Well.
He's a glutton for punishment.
He is a glutton for punishment. I think he wants an award.
I think so, too. We're going to have to come up with the Rune Award.
Yeah, we will.
I used to love that game, Rune.
A Rooney?
A Rune was a great game.
Rune was an awesome game. Mm-hmm. I love that game. They don't make it no more, though.
No, they don't.
All the good
it's
stuff.
All gone.
It all goes away.
But Rune has supplied us with some interesting news from the other side of the pond.
Chad's going to read that while I step out of the room for a moment.
Yep.
All the men in the audience will understand, which is probably 99.9% of our listeners.
First off, the Apple TV and iTunes problems in Europe. In Europe and Norway, they have a special problem. He's saying we can't download great TV shows and movies from the USA because of some stupid rules from the movie and TV shows in Apple in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
He says, and I really hope that Apple in Europe will change that so that you don't have to live in the USA or have a US address to download shows and movies made in the USA. Instead, we have to BitTorrent program to download them. If Europe can download the same movies and TV shows from the U.S., and hopefully in HD or at least DVD quality, I'd buy an Apple TV myself, or I would buy one for work, and Apple would make more money. This is what's stopping the sale in Europe for Apple TV, and it's the same with the iPhone, since we use other phone providers in the U.S. does. The new iTunes version has movies and TV show support, but we can't use this feature yet because of poor offers in Europe. And so basically, Rune is hoping for a deal between Apple and the EU, or at least Apple Europe will seal the deal with some better content providers so that he can start to get movies through iTunes instead of BitTorrent using iTunes. And I have to agree with him. One of the nice things I like about Apple TV is about, well, at least even iTunes, is that although I don't download movies or shows very often in iTunes, it sure is convenient when I do.
Yeah.
I still want to get an Apple TV. I just don't want to spend $300 for one.
Yeah.
It just seems... Okay, the dog got in. I'm going to let him back out because, wow, the skunk smell came back.
I think it's coming out. Funny how that works.
Yeah, it still could be in there. I mean, she got a mouthful of it, so.
Ugh. I can't imagine. Well, I mean, just getting it on my skin would be bad enough.
We'll record the important podcast so Tim won't gag. Okay, I'm back now. Putting on the headphones.
What else do we have from Rune, Chad?
Well, Rune has got some speed comparisons on Adobe CS3.
Mm.
So he's saying, I've tried Adobe CS3 or Adobe Photoshop CS3 Trial Edition on both the G4 and the Intel processor.
And the Trial Edition, of course, is the beta.
Yep.
Yep.
So the new Adobe CS3 has just been released, and on your show you wonder how fast Adobe CS3 is on the Intel processor or G4, G5 processor, and here are his stats.
Well, you know, before you get into those, I have to say, like I was just saying a few minutes ago, so far, from my limited time with Adobe CS3 on my MacBook Pro, this is not a G4 computer or a G5 computer, which I'll test later. Mm-hmm. It was extremely fast. It launched so much faster than Photoshop CS2.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I did was just snappy. I save a lot. I use the Save for Web a lot with all my graphics that I'm creating for the website.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when I do the key combination, I think it's... I don't know, it's like four keys I have to push to save for web. Under CS2, I'd push those keys, and there was always this little pause, then it would come up, and then it would show me the graphic. With CS3, I do that, and it's like, done, it's right there.
Mm-hmm. Here you go.
It almost surprised me. I was like, oh, wait. Holy crap, that was fast. So what's Rune's speed results?
He was testing it on a MacBook Intel Core 2 Duo, 2 gigahertz,
yep,
with 1 gig of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, I've been using a new MacBook 2 gig machine for over 4 weeks. The machine is super fast and great and even runs Windows XP Pro with boot camp and parallels is very fast as well, and I just love the coherence mode.
This is a MacBook or MacBook Pro?
This is a MacBook.
So basically the same machine you're resting your arm on is a doorstop right now.
Yeah, essentially. Except, okay, I don't know if mine's a 2 gig. Mine might be a 1.83.
I think it is. You know, you just like push the whole microphone over. It sounded really good, sorry. I'm sure.
Oh, I can't hear you now.
Okay, so he's running macOS 10.4.9 with all the updates, including the April 27, 2007 from Apple.
You okay there, guy?
Yeah, my children are apparently going insane upstairs at the moment.
Bang on the floor and say, Dad's doing some important stuff on the computer.
Hey, kids, get off my lawn!
And here are Rune's speed results. Basically, he's comparing CS3 versus CS2. So he said for CS3, the startup time averaged 15 seconds with the best time of 14.9 seconds. The CS2 startup time was about 35 seconds, which was with a best time of 37.15 seconds.
That's twice as fast.
Yeah.
On launching.
Huh. Yep.
That's pretty
impressive. Is that all he tested?
Didn't he do a G4 as well?
No, he was using a G4, but he didn't put the results for that. So.
Ah. Speaking of speed, I got something from FastMac the other day.
Aha! So you finally emailed them and said, "Hey, how about a processor upgrade?" And did it just literally fall out of the sky like I was berating you about?
Well, it did, and I'm going to sue. So hit me square on top of the head. So I used to have hair.
Did you actually install it yet?
No, I haven't installed it yet. Because basically what I need to do is set up the old Quicksilver, you know, get it all updated to the latest OS, run some stuff, do some timing on it, and then install it, and then do the same things all over again.
Hmm. Well, I'm looking forward to your review. You ever think about maybe doing a video review of it, of like installing it or something like that?
Oh, that would be more along the lines of a comedy, not a review.
Well, to wrap up the show, I want to thank Audible.com. Ask everyone that's listening to please visit MyMac.com. Click the Audible banner and sign up for that free account. 2 weeks, you get a free audiobook. You can't beat that. And on a personal note, I want to announce that my wife is pregnant.
I was about to say, are you pregnant?
my wife is 10 weeks pregnant. This will be our fourth child. And she's due in November, towards the end of November.
Yep.
And I couldn't be happier. Obviously, I have three girls. I'm hoping for a boy. Mm-hmm. But more than that, I'm hoping for a Mac user.
a healthy child.
That's really what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I will love the child, whether it's healthy or it's not healthy. But not for my benefit. I want a healthy child for its benefit.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a girl, we have no idea what the name is going to be. Mm-hmm. And if it's a boy, we're going to reuse the name that we picked for Brooke if she would have been a boy, but she wasn't, thus Brooke. And that's going to be Cole, so C-O-L-E.
Yep.
And no, not after Cole Trickle, the stupid Tom Cruise movie either.
So she's going to be a Scientologist.
Yeah. She could be the child could be anything it wants as long as it's happy. That's all I care about.
Except a Scientologist.
No.
Or a Zune user.
It can be, well, let's not go to the Zune user. I mean, let's keep it in. It can be a Scientologist if it's a wants or any cult.
How could it be happy being a Zune user?
Yeah, guy. I said we want it to be happy.
Oh.
So that,
you're going to put conditions on it.
Yes. So that's our segment. Stick around for the interview and fenestration, and we will be back next week with a contest. Don't forget, send your contest entries to
contest@mymac.com with your name, address, phone number, and hey, even your iChat or Skype contact number.
Make sure your phone number's in there, because if it's not, I can guarantee you won't win.
That's right.
And if you guys want to comment on anything that you've heard on the show, you want to get some audio feedback,
I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
This has been a real train wreck of a show.
You can leave us a message on our Skype number. That's 1-801-938-5559.
And we'd appreciate all the feedback, just like Rune. Thanks, Rune. We appreciate your feedback. And we'll see everyone again next week.
This is David Cohen, the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. I'm trying to start a new segment on the MyMac.com podcast, and I need the help of you listeners to do it. I want to understand what it's like for you to be a Macintosh user and a MyMac.com listener all around the world. Where do you buy your app equipment? What's it like not having an Apple store just up the road? Do you stay up in the middle of the night so that you can read the latest American RSS feed for Mac News? It's a big wide world out there, and I'd like to talk to you about it. I'm looking for listeners who are interested in doing a short Skype interview with me for future segments on the MyMac.com podcast. All you need is a copy of Skype, a headset, and a few minutes of your time. If you're interested, please get in touch with me at davidcohen@mymac.com or our main podcast email address, mymacpodcast@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you.
Hi, my name is Tom Schmidt. Have you ever wanted an Apple-certified technician available whenever the need arose? Well, now you have one at the MyMac.com help desk. Email your questions or problems to tom@mymac.com. I will do the best that I can to answer them. I have over 20 years of Macintosh experience and the resources of one of the top three Apple specialist dealers in the United States at my disposal. Also, be sure to read the MyMac.com help desk column the last week of each month on the MyMac.com website. Send your letters to tom@mymac.com. Thanks for reading, and thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.
Sitting in front of me at the Book Bites in our recording studio is a stack up to the ceiling of books on color management for digital photography. I've got one by Bruce Fraser, one by Joshua Weisberg, Tim Gray. Let's see, who's teaching this one? Eddie Tapp. And then there's a dummies book, Color Management for Digital Photography for Dummies, by Ted Padova and Don Mason. And my very favorite, the most serious one, Color Correction for Digital Photographers Only. Authors are Don Mason and Ted Padova. Publisher is Wiley. Price in the United States is $40. $52 in Canada, and £26 in the UK. The page count is 390 pages. It's got beautiful, bold text and screenshots and excellent production values. And BookBytes Live is happy to meet author Don Mason on the line with us now. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon, John. It's nice to be here.
And you talk about Photoshop Elements and Adobe Photoshop CS2 and CS3 for color correction. A lot of amateurs and consumers are using Elements. Why do you recommend the professional Photoshop CS2 or CS3 and not Elements version 4 or even version 5 for Windows for serious digital darkroom work?
Well, Elements is a great value for the price and offers a casual user all the tools they would probably ever need. But Photoshop offers a much more extensive tool set compared to Photoshop Elements. And the color management features in Photoshop are far superior also.
Now, many people say that for doing premium color management work, that the heavy glass CRT displays are better than any quality LCD, than the newer lightweight matte or glossy displays for proper color management. Why is that? Why are those old-fashioned displays considered to be better for doing correct color work for digital photographers?
That's a good question, John. LCDs have improved tremendously in the last 5 to 10 years, but still suffer from a few flaws compared to a good high-end CRT monitor. Biggest problem is trying to get a modern LCD monitor to match a hard copy output in a viewing booth. They're just too bright, have too much dynamic range, and they still really don't have as much color fidelity as the good old-fashioned CRT.
Well, how proficient with Photoshop do readers need to be in order to make the best use of this very thorough book, Color Correction for Digital Photographers Only, that we're reviewing today on BookBytes Live here at the MyMac.com podcast? How much of an expert at Photoshop does somebody need to be to actually work fully with this book, Don Mason?
I think even an advanced novice could find great value in the book. We tried very hard to stay away from too much complex mumbo-jumbo, and we do concentrate mostly on the fundamental tools for color correction.
But you begin by talking about RAW, and RAW is all over the place as far as digital photographers are concerned. Which RAW formats, either for camera or computer, should people now be using? How long does it take to become familiar with working in RAW, and where are the RAW standards heading?
Well, of course, everyone should be using a Mac as far as the computer goes.
Amen.
I wouldn't use anything else. But each camera manufacturer has their own unique code set for RAW files, and I personally don't see any real standardization between the manufacturers. But Adobe has created the digital negative format.
DNG.
DNG. And that is really the only RAW standard that I'm aware that exists. But the DNG format's available in Photoshop, Lightroom, and Bridge. And I think RAW workflow is the only way to go at this time. And it really doesn't take that long to get used to working with RAW files. It's very similar to working with a RAW scan, and you just take it where you want to go.
Well, your book is current up to Adobe Photoshop CS2, and now that CS3 has been released, is this book, Color Correction for Digital Photographers Only, from Wiley Publishing, is it going to be updated for CS3, or is it still valid based on the CS2 screenshots and lessons that you have inside?
We hope we'll be asked to create a revised edition to the book, but that's entirely up to Wiley Publishing. But the methods used in the book are completely valid for CS3. The principles of digital color correction remain the same, regardless of the software used. So I think even with CS3, people will still find the book very valuable.
But your book really is very much about learning to work as a digital photographer in the digital darkroom. The one area where people really have questions is in skin tones, and you spend a lot of time on balancing skin tones. However, are those instructions valid for dark skin subjects, or are they only the pale face people that are in your illustrations in this book, Don?
The instructions are valid for all skin types, although pale faces tend to be the biggest problem in obtaining really pleasing flesh tones. You know, pale skin shows color inconsistencies far more than darker skin tones. But the methods we demonstrate for correcting the inconsistencies of skin tone and hue work well with all skin types.
A lot of us have old slides that we want to copy. And you say a copy camera, a digital camera used as a copy camera, is better than a scanner for converting existing photo prints and slides to digital images. Is that really the case, or should we be using slide scanners or flatbed or drum scanners? Which is better, a copy camera or a scanner?
John, it depends on the original involved. If the original has a flawless, untextured surface, then a scanner will work just fine. But if the original has a surface texture, cracks, or any kind of differential gloss, a copy camera with polarized lighting will give far better results.
I haven't tried that since my 35mm light box days, but I'm willing to give it a crack at your recommendation. Now, it appears that readers of this book will be assaulted by RAW at the beginning, and then you seem to segue into JPEG, PSD, and TIFF. Would you say your book is useful both for the RAW crowd and for the conventional JPEG, Photoshop, and TIFF format people wanting to learn from your tutorials?
Oh, most certainly. In fact, the editing principles are the same for RAW and files you bring in from standard formats. It's still the same battle, no matter what the file format happens to be.
Well, seeing is believing. We'll try some of these lessons, and we'll see if that is indeed the case. Now, on page 210 in the book Color Correction for Digital Photographers Only, author Don Mason, you mention Mason's patent-pending mixed mode image save, which I call the MPPMMIS. And I'm going to read you a sentence. Here we go. The solution is to use multiple duplicate layers with the apply image command using screen mode while alternating between normal and luminosity modes in the layer stack at 50% opacity. Now, a sentence like that is going to have anybody screaming for the aisles. Are we going to be scared, or are we going to feel comfortable with the language and the terminology in your book, Color Correction for Digital Photographers Only?
That sentence is a tough intro, although the technique itself is very simple. And when trying to fix a severely underexposed photo, as long as you just keep duping those layers and hit an apply image, it'll come up to a brightness level that's easy to work with.
And my understanding is if you follow the pro tips and the cross references and the notes and the sidebars and the screenshots and the itemized lessons in this book, you will actually be able to master the lessons. And I do want to tell readers that there are lesson files, image files, and also text help files on the internet that are available to every reader of this book. Thank you for putting those out rather than having a CD. That way we can all get those image files from authors Ted Padova and Don Mason. Can you tell us just briefly about your excellent methods for converting from color to black and white? What is your favorite method for converting from color to black?
You know, I'm glad you asked that question. The new black and white conversion tool in CS3 sort of trumps all my older techniques. I prefer to use Channel Mixer these days if I'm doing black and white conversions, and if I'm not using CS3. But boy, that new tool in CS3, the black and white converter, is absolutely outstanding.
And our colleague Deke McClellan is just jumping for joy about that thing.
Oh, it is awesome. Adobe really outdid themselves.
Let's talk about printing. Because really, at the end of the day, color correction makes the most impact when we're printing. And I want to congratulate you on that excellent chapter, a long chapter, 37 pages or something like that, about printing. Obviously, that is really where the chicken all come home to roost. Give us one critical nugget about printing, author Don Mason.
I think the most critical thing to get good output from any printing device is just to have a very accurate output profile and to set your output device up properly to use that profile. And if your monitor has been well calibrated, it should be pretty seamless. And we do cover in the book all the pitfalls if that's not happening for the reader.
And there certainly are unending confusions regarding the best printing method. And I urge readers, this is for serious photographers. I don't want to gloss over it because you better be serious about your digital photography and you better be prepared to make a commitment to Adobe Photoshop, the professional version of Photoshop, if you're going to get the most from Color Correction for Digital Photographers Only, which is the book we are discussing today on the MyMac.com podcast in the Book Bites live segment. Tell us about the Q&A, the questions and answers at the end of every chapter, Don.
Those were added. It was part of the format of this particular book series. Try to give an easy summary of what the reader has just discovered in that chapter. And hopefully the reader will find that helpful and they'll be able to realize whether they've understood the chapter or not.
Well, are you working on any other books with your co-author, Ted Padova, who we interviewed recently for his PDF Bible?
We recently finished Color Management for Dummies by one.
I've got that right in front of me. Why should somebody get that book and not the Color Correction book? What's the difference between the two books, Don Mason?
Color Management for Dummies is based on Photoshop Elements.
Aha.
And it would really help the reader get the most out of Photoshop Elements if they're serious about color correction, because that book also contains as many color correction tips as we could provide when using Photoshop Elements.
That book is $30 U.S., $36 in Canada, £20 in the U.K. It is 318 pages, and it's loaded with colorful examples for the serious but not quite professional photographer or digital darkroom artist. Would you agree with that, Don?
Yes, I would. Elements is an outstanding piece of software for the money.
And that is Color Management for Digital Photographers for Dummies by Ted Padova and Don Mason, and Color Correction for Digital Photographers Only by Ted Padova and Don Mason. Thank you so much for joining us on the Book Bites live segment here at the MyMac.com podcast. And we understand you're too busy to have your own website. So if people want to learn more about you, they better pick up a copy of one of these books, whether they're using Elements or CS2 or CS3. One of the books by you and Ted Padova will do the trick. Thank you for joining us. And we appreciate you writing these wonderful books with so many detailed itemized steps and very happy to just roll up our sleeves and get to work in the digital darkroom. Thank you, Don Mason.
Well, thank you, John. It was a pleasure to be here.
Inside Home Recording, the podcast that covers the latest in home studio recording with your hosts, Paul Garay and Derek K. Miller.
Hi, I'm Paul.
And I'm Derek.
Inside Home Recording is the longest-running podcast about recording music in your home or project studio. We started it in August 2005.
We release a new show every 2 weeks, and it's packed with honest gear reviews, guest interviews, news, tips, opinions, and cool recording giveaways.
We have thousands of listeners around the world who keep giving us five-star reviews.
We're part of the Home Recording Network, and Apple even asked Paul to host their online podcast seminar.
You had to mention that, didn't you? So how do people find us?
Just search your favorite podcast directory for Home Recording, or head on over to InsideHomeRecording.com. We have a blog and forums there, too.
Well, I think that covers it. If you're interested in digital audio, come check us out at Inside Home Recording.
And remember to turn up that cowbell. Happy recording.
InsideHomeRecording.com.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.